Inside Lacrosse Podcast.
Welcome back to the Inside Lacrosse MCLA Podcast. On this, a holiday weekend week, rather, I suppose, in between. Dave, obviously, with Passover this week, you know, certainly some time away from work with the family, kind of catching your breath, taking a little bit of a pause, and, you know, I hope to be doing a little bit of the same with Easter on the horizon. But also, you know, for sports fans, this is one of the pinnacles. This is, you know, the kind of the week between the craziness of the first weekend of March Madness and the, I guess, nitty-gritty hoops of Sweet 16. I'm actually going to D.C. tonight. I'm going to check out the East Regional, which pits Indiana versus Syracuse and Marquette versus Miami. Really, really stoked about that. It's going to be awesome. But when we dive in here, we got to jump through your eight picks for the Sweet 16 games.
Yep, it's been an exciting time. It was nice to get a little bit revitalized with some Passover family time, and I wish you and your family a very happy Easter, Terry. But over the course of my the last few weeks watching March Madness and seeing the bracket unfold, my bracket is pretty much not looking so good. I had Gonzaga going pretty far, so unfortunate. But as far as the Sweet 16 picks are concerned, I have the Miami Hurricanes over Marquette. Marquette I did not have going far. I really wanted Davidson to win that first round game. Terry, this is a pick for you. You know, it's not easy for me to do this as a Michigan fan, but, you know, I think that Ohio State's going to beat Arizona. Syracuse over Indiana, that's a pick for my girlfriend and a pick against my dad because he's a Big Ten homer being a Michigan guy. LaSalle over Wichita State, whoever thought that was going to be a Sweet 16 game. I think LaSalle and the Southwest Philly floater is going to shock the shockers. Louisville over Oregon, definitely an interesting game to talk about. Our guest in today's podcast is Oregon lacrosse head coach Phil Keebler, and thankfully he's not on the line now, because as great as a run as Oregon has had through the Pac-12 basketball championship, I think Patino and the Louisville Cardinals have that one locked up. You know, it's going to be a very interesting basketball analysis session for me, because I've picked Ohio State, I've picked against Indiana, and now I'm going to pick against Michigan, because I think that the one seed Kansas is going to go very far and possibly win it all. Duke against Michigan State, a battle of two Hall of Fame coaches, Krzyzewski versus Izzo. I think Krzyzewski has the upper hand. And then Florida over Florida Gulf Coast. We'll talk about how that applies to MCLA lacrosse in a second, but what an interesting dynamic there. Florida Gulf Coast, a very young school, really devoted to getting their name out there through their athletic department, through their basketball program, advancing to the Sweet 16 against the flagship program from the state. I think that the Gators will ultimately chomp out the Eagles in that one, but what a great run it's been for FGCU.
No doubt. And as for the degree to which I agree / disagree, you picked, I believe, yeah, you picked all four of my Final Four teams in Ohio State, Cuse, Louisville, and Florida. So at least as far as my bracket is concerned, that's where my heart's at. I think the Duke-Michigan State game is probably the one that, you know, Duke-Michigan State, LaSalle, Wichita State, those would be the two that I expect to be both potentially closest, as well as, you know, possibly reversing fortunes. And then the other one that, you know, and I get to see it tonight is Marquette and Miami. That's, you know, two great coaches. I'm a huge Buzz Williams fan.
Yeah, I noticed that on Twitter.
Yeah, actually. Dude, I can't get away from it. I mean, I don't know what it is. He's just so, like, I want to play for that guy. I want that guy to coach me in checkers. I don't know what it is. Like, it's just awesome. So that's going to be one that I'm excited about seeing. And I don't know. I mean, I watched that, the opening round game, against Davidson, and obviously, the way they were able to hold off Butler. You know, at that point I was, you know, my bracket was telling me Butler, my heart was telling me Marquette. So the way that it played out was pretty wild. But yeah, it just kind of seems like, you know, they've got a little bit of the mojo in the last 2 minutes of games, and, you know, they've been able to find ways to win. So I'm not sure that, I don't know. I don't know enough about Miami to be able to say that they can't overcome that type of late game magic.
Right.
But yeah, those are the three games. Those are the three picks. Miami, LaSalle, and Duke that I think I would be the most reluctant to agree with you on.
Yeah, I would tend to agree that those are the closest ones, just because of the way that the teams match up. But let's reverse this a little bit. You kind of take me into my day job and my expertise. As far as lacrosse is concerned, you know, as far as being an expert, it's really only on the MCLA scene. But it was nice, actually, to have a regular working day yesterday, get home in the PM hour when it was still light out, and actually catch the UNC Brown game on ESPNU. I found it to be very exciting. A lot of cool things as far as Brown's goalie dynamic and UNC's offense. So what do you take away from that one, Terry?
Well, I think that, you know, again, North Carolina's attack shows itself to be as dangerous as any in the country, and their production is unprecedented in terms of, you know, what even expectations might have been for them coming into the season. And obviously, you know, you mentioned the Brown goalie change, and I think that, you know, there's something to be said for having that much depth and that much talent on your roster. When you bring in, you know, a guy who was an All-Ivy League goalie last year as your fourth quarter replacement after your freshman starter, didn't have the outing that you would have liked to see him have, you know, it says a lot about your program. It says a lot about where you at, where you're at. And, you know, when you look back to the legacy of goalies that, that Brown's produced, most recently Jordan Burke, but then, you know, going all the way back to a guy like Greg Cotrano, it's, no surprise that, that's kind of the status of things there. But, you know, Brown, I think right now is probably somewhere between the mix of, you know, kind of, it depends on how you look at it. So the Ivy League, you know, five teams that are probably a cut above Dartmouth and Harvard. The remaining five teams are. So, you know, Cornell, I think, in most people's eyes is the favorite. And then it trickles down, and you say Penn, Princeton, Yale, Brown, how do they all kind of align with each other? And that's going to be the story of the league. And, you know, I think that it's probably a three-team, three-bid league, but it'll, you know, have to see which league they're able to steal that third bid from. You know, and then I think there's a possibility, depending on how they've done so well out of conference and depending on how their conference tournament lines up, that it could be even a four team league. Whereas on the flip side, North Carolina now, they need Brown to remain a top 20 win, for at least the short term until they kind of solidify themselves with a few more league wins, or Johns Hopkins, who they have this weekend. You know, their resume is stacking up pretty smartly, but you know, there's a lot that'll change over the course of the next month or so as that kind of bottom top, you know, that bottom of the top 20 RPI plays itself out and ultimately you know, can be so impactful when it comes to both who gets in and out of the at-large bids as well as you know, what the outcome is for seeding. So it's just wild that we're here in the last week of March and already being able to project forward to the NCAA tournament. It's been, you know, and that was a pretty cool game to watch in terms of the implications between an ACC and an Ivy matchup.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And the fact of the matter is that we're in a similar juncture with the MCLA season. And a lot of the things I've been reporting about and tweeting about lately is what bubble teams want their opponents to do going forward in order to solidify their postseason hopes. So when you mention that UNC wants Brown to continue to be well, so that continues to be a top 20 win, when I talk about a lot of the upcoming games for a lot of these bubble teams, it's, yes, I mean, we'll get into it with Franklin's 15 minutes of fame. Sonoma State has gotten a large string of out-of-conference wins. Sonoma State not guaranteed anything in the WCLL as they compete with Cal, Stanford, and Cal Poly for that matter. So you really want all of those out-of-conference wins to remain top 25, top 15 quality wins. And for that matter, see those teams win their respective conferences, because the way that it kind of defers to the MCLA tournament, if you beat a team that ultimately earned their own automatic qualifying bid, that really helps your at-large hopes. And before we get into the MCLA fully here, we have the men's lacrosse debut on CBS Sports Network this Sunday. Obviously, this is a very exciting time for year with me doing basketball, MCLA lacrosse, and a little bit of the Division I editorial work I do with CBS. Army Colgate, Terry, I think it's going to be a really cool matchup. I think that Peter Baum got exposed earlier this year against Cornell when his 20-plus game goal-scoring streak was broken. Army is known to be a strong defensive team. What do you take from this game that's going to be on our network this Sunday?
Well, I think it's going to be a premier matchup at two ends of the field, and I think that, you know, Brendan Buckley, a defenseman for Army, is among the best cover guys in all of college lacrosse. You know, Army hasn't had, you know, the premier season that they had 2 and 3 years ago, so he hasn't gotten as much of the attention as a result of that. But I think that the likelihood that he ends up on Baum is pretty high. Did a nice job against him last year. And then on the flip side, at the other end of the field, you know, Bobby Lawrence is a very compact, active defenseman, and I think that it's a little less likely that he ends up guarding Garrett Thule, you know, who is a big, powerful shooter. But they, you know, no doubt will match up at times. And, you know, those will be two interesting kind of chess pieces to see how each coaches use their best players at either end of the field in order to make sure that, you know, they get as many of the advantages as possible. You know, I think it's a game in which, you know, possession will be important. Having Jesse Colgate kind of dismantle Old Navy last week, you know, it was one of the things where Colgate was so efficient offensively, kind of the opposite of that Cornell game you were referring to, that they were able to, you know, keep Navy on the on their heels because they, you know, routinely were able to, you know, just kind of get a small possession advantage. So whether it was, you know, the teams would trade turnovers and then Navy would turn it over a third time when they were trying to clear the ball or something like that, you know, those were the areas in which Colgate was able to take advantage of. And I think, you know, against Army, that advantage will be a little bit less because I expect Army to be a little less sloppy with the ball. But, you know, it's still something to be mindful of as you know, the Black Knights really could, you know, make some noise if they get this win. The Patriot League is shaping up to be very similar to what it was last year, with the exception of the fact that Bucknell is, you know, at this point appears, despite the fact they're coming off a midweek loss against Penn State, appears to be the class of the league, probably the favorite for the number one seed right now. You know, Colgate and Lehigh probably battling it out in 2 and 3. That four spot is a little bit wide open, and you know, Army probably wants to make sure that they can do what they do what they can to solidify their claim on that four spot, and a win over Colgate would go a long way toward doing that.
Awesome. Yeah, Patriot League lacrosse is really one of the most exciting, interesting leagues for me to follow, if I do say so myself, and it'll certainly get more interesting when Loyola joins the mix.
Yeah, Loyola and BU. You know, obviously BU probably doesn't have the expectations that Loyola does in terms of competing immediately upon their arrival. But, you know, I'm one of those guys that I'd love to see the progress of first-year programs, what types of progress they can make. And, you know, I think that what BU will be able to do in their first season, you know, given the legacy of lacrosse on that campus with the women's team having been successful for a long time, as well as, you know, kind of the geographical advantages they have being so close in proximity to, you know, great lacrosse in the Boston area, as well as, you know, the commitment that the university has made to those types of sports, particularly looking at hockey and the way in which they've positioned that program nationally. You know, it probably won't be very long before BU is a really competitive program in that league, and certainly when you add to the top and the bottom, you know, the likelihood is that, you know, it crunches the middle, and it'll be very wild to see how that continues to sort itself out as programs like Lehigh, Colgate, that have made strides towards being either competitive in Lehigh's case or continually competitive in Colgate's case, a team that, you know, has made the NCAA tournament sporadically since 2008. You know, it's definitely exciting, and it'll only get more so. You know, 9 teams in this league, it's pretty wild to consider, because you know, when you consider the toughness from top to bottom, it's clearly going to be the best you know, the best balanced conference in all of Division I lacrosse, particularly when you take into account its size.
I absolutely agree. I'm looking forward to it from this chair that I sit in at CBS Sports Network in future years. It should definitely be exciting and really also awesome to see that similarly to the Ivy League, all of these schools, including Loyola and BU, really hold themselves to very high academic standards as well. So getting back into the MCLA mix of things.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm sure that there are a lot of MCLA fans out there that are like, wait, this, I think I downloaded the wrong podcast.
It's a basketball podcast, it's the one podcast we don't know. But the last thing that's oriented into anything that's not fully MCLA is, of course, Florida Gulf Coast and how basketball momentum applies to athletic success. And listen, if there's a team that's flying under the radar more so than any other team that's currently ranked in Division I or Division II of the MCLA, I definitely think it's number 13, Florida Gulf Coast, out of the SCLC in Division II of the Nike Inside Lacrosse MCLA poll. We've been talking about the past few weeks about the SCLC dynamic, the way how big the conference is, the way that their postseason shakes out, the way that SCAD made the national tournament last year off of some big out-of-conference wins, including that of Davenport, but then having a fluke loss to Palm Beach Atlantic that kept them out of the SCLC playoffs. In the meantime, Palm Beach Atlantic has also gotten some big out-of-conference wins, fell to SCAD in a revenge game per se, and now Palm Beach Atlantic has to look forward to playing this 13th-ranked Florida Gulf Coast team. Also has beaten some great out-of-conference opponents, really has earned their spot at the number 13 spot in the poll with their 7-1 record. So I really think that we could have more madness ensuing in the MCLA lacrosse world if Florida Gulf Coast should knock off Palm Beach Atlantic. The SCLC seems to be clinching bids to Greenville faster than others, as we saw Liberty make some real strides in the poll, not only last week but this week as well. But, you know, PBA has seemingly done enough to punch their ticket to Greenville, but when you take a look at their one loss to SCAD and the way that their region shakes out for the SCLC postseason, it could just be a very weird year, as it was last year.
Yeah, I mean, obviously this is something that you can speak better to than I can, understanding the nuances of the way that the bracket works out. But, you know, this is something you've been talking about for a month now, and I definitely think that, you know, as it relates to not only the dynamics of the conference, the tournament, but, you know, the other aspect of it, which being, you know, just kind of the general ascendance of the profile of a program, you know, when you look at, and this is one of the things that as I've gotten to be more familiar with the MCLA, you know, I've kind of tried to keep a finger on, get my head around, but, you know, the idea of profile and legacy to a certain degree, you know, being so much more influential in the MCLA than it is in NCAA Division I, where it already is very influential. You know, when a program or a university experiences the influx of attention like what Florida Gulf Coast got, this past weekend and this week, you know, despite the fact that it probably doesn't have a tangible outcome or a tangible impact on, the actual quality of what happens on the field, you know, it's just so different when you know, somebody sees a score flash, you know, a poll voter sees a score flash across, you know, the website or in their inbox or whatever, and they decide to take a closer look at it, and then it just kind of, you know, the way the internet does, leads to a rabbit hole of researching a little bit more about the team, and you start to realize, okay, their resume is a little bit stronger than maybe I even thought it was on paper. You know, maybe they get an extra vote, they get bumped up a spot, and all of a sudden when it comes to, you know, translating that into NCAA or MCLA tournament seating, you know, where that's the primary reason I refer to the difference between the NCAA and the MCLA, you know, the nature of voting and what it means versus, you know, the way in which math is brought into the NCAA equation, you know, just something that I'm going to pay attention to as somebody that doesn't know a lot about it.
I mean, Terry, you really hit the nail right on the head, Mr. Foy. Perception and reputation are very, very important when it comes to MCLA postseason consideration. We talked about it last year about there kind of being an old money, new money, a divide in the MCLA in regards to the teams that really help establish this league, back in the 90s and have been to most, if not all of the MCLA tournaments compared to those who've only, enjoyed recent success. And, you know, Florida Gulf Coast has never been to an MCLA tournament before, but again, flying under the radar right now at the number 13 spot in the poll. And there's just a lot of positive buzz right now around the university and around the athletic department. And you also have to take in consideration with the way that this relates to NCAA Division I lacrosse is that the Atlantic Sun Conference, which Florida Gulf Coast participates in, has announced that they will fully sponsor lacrosse as a sport, of course, welcoming in some schools from other conferences who will be able to compete regionally in that area. But a lot of people have been asking about the current MCLA institutions that compete in the Atlantic Sun, such as Florida Gulf Coast and Kennesaw State. And the only thing that I could say in regards to and how it relates to some of the programs that you've talked about who have made the jump from the MCLA to the NCAA recently and the way that the university supports these programs, from day one, from the day that Kennesaw State started their club program outside the MCLA and matriculated in, the university showed a lot of support for the program to the extent that they have this new soccer stadium now that's going to be hosting MLL games this summer, as well as I believe hosted some NCAA college games earlier this year. Florida Gulf Coast, it's not a secret. This school was started with intentions of building a great basketball program by the beach, and they've now installed a very good MCLA lacrosse program. How it relates to the A-Sun and how they work their athletic budget and their Division I lacrosse future, you know, all these questions were very much up in the air, but I perceive some more MCLA turnover here to the NCAA and how it pertains to these schools in this conference. And even though Kennesaw State and Florida Gulf Coast are two teams that have yet to break through the SCLC tournament to make it to the MCLA big show, these are teams that have a lot of positive energy revolving around them right now, and especially the way that applies to Florida Gulf Coast, it could have some pretty significant postseason implications for sure.
Yeah, and you know, the only thing I can say about it from a D1 side, you know, kind of having my roots a little bit more firmly entrenched in that, is that, you know, both Kennesaw and Florida Gulf Coast are among a handful of, you know, Big South, Atlantic Sun, Sun Belt schools that, you know, have been mentioned in terms of, so who's next, who's next, who's next? You know, it's constantly the question that gets asked. And a couple of the people that I talk to that know things have, you know, included those two schools. So, you know, obviously Kennesaw, you know, hosting an MLL game, you know, hosting, I think they're doing something else. I can't remember what. You know, adding women's lacrosse. You know, those are the types of signs that, you know, at least show that there's smoke, if not absolutely fire. So definitely interesting to watch.
And that's why we're a good team for this podcast, Harry.
Absolutely, coming at it from both angles.
Yeah, and then as far as the Division One poll shakes up this week, again, we have a little bit of a different program, so you can kind of see my poll analysis from my post on InsideLacrosse.com from this past Wednesday. But obviously, like, you know, coming off of the Division Two discussion and how it comes and how it relates to the SCLC, Liberty, of course, also making a big jump from the number 8 to the number 6 spot. Really dismantling a Davidson team. We thought that Davidson was a team that was also one to watch in the SCLC and still might be. They played a one-goal game against Elon, and Liberty going into Davidson, beating them 23-4, absolutely dismantling them. Ryan Miller, a former recipient of Franklin's 15 minutes of fame early in the season, just a freshman for this Flames team, amassing 10 points against the Wildcats. I think we could like kind of pencil this kid's name in for MCLA Freshman of the Year by any division. He's just outstanding. The way that it relates to, and then the way that kind of mirrors off of the Division One poll, I think that we had one of the biggest stories of the MCLA season last night or yesterday afternoon when BYU, ranked number 6, knocked off a third-ranked Stanford team 13-7. It was kind of in question if Stanford was going to be able to keep their undefeated record going, and I think that Cal Poly really showed what they were worth last year when they took down BYU, and that was a real litmus test game for them when they started off hot, but Stanford not able to have the same success. I definitely still think they're a lead pipe for the MCLA tournament to get one of three bids from the WCLL, but it should be very interesting. I think that Stanford shouldn't really drop any lower than 8th in the next poll, and BYU currently ranked number 6. Not happy with their ranking, but they have a game this weekend against Colorado. They have Colorado State, of course, later in the season as well, currently ranked number 1 and 2. So BYU with a lot of opportunities to once again break into the top 3 where they quite possibly belong. And then
let me jump right in there because I actually got a chance to talk to Coach Schneck yesterday after their win. And it was an interesting just kind of dynamic because, you know, in speaking with you, you know, it seemed like this BYU team, because of the fact that at the beginning of the season, you know, their win over Chapman, you know, just kind of typical BYU is what you would expect. Then they lose to Arizona State. You know, obviously Arizona State is among the premier programs in the MCLA, so it's not a terrible loss, but, they lost by 5 goals. You know, it could have been worse than that. You know, granted it was on the road, but still, ultimately what I'm getting at is that, you know, it wasn't clear whether this BYU team was going to be, you know, a national title contender or, you know, maybe a Final Four contender, which those are two distinct, I guess, kind of levels for a program. And I think that when you look at this stretch, first they had 3 games in 3 days against, you know, Oregon, Cal, and Stanford. Mm-hmm. Tough stretch. You certainly expect them to probably win the first 2 games and then struggle with Stanford just based on the way that the poll had shaken out so far. And then, you know, immediately that goes into a Colorado State, Westminster stretch. And granted, that wasn't nearly as compressed and they get 2 of those teams at home. The fact was that, all right, well, this is kind of rubber meeting the road point in the season for BYU. They're going to have an opportunity to rack up some high quality wins, but the likelihood that they make it through 6-0 is pretty slim. You know, they're 3 games in and they're 3-0. Well, the likelihood that they make it through the next 3-0 is a little bit higher. So, you know, as we kind of look forward towards BYU's status heading into the MCLA tournament, you know, I think Coach Schneck just seemed a little happy, maybe a little relieved in our conversation yesterday.
I'm not surprised to hear that. BYU has among one of the most experienced coaching staffs in the MCLA, even with the turnover that they had coming off of the 2007 season. 2007, Jordan Harris was a player on that team, and Coach Schneck was an assistant. So they really keep the nucleus very tight there, as people will come to learn throughout our Inside the Cross MCLA coverage, the very unique dynamics that go into this BYU program, the way that they helped start the USLA a few years ago, the way that their culture, being a Mormon institution, plays into everything, and the turnover with their team from year to year and the way they're able to succeed. A lot of interesting storylines. But listen, they're still, as I said before, they're one of the best, most experienced, wisest coaching staffs in the MCLA. They play their best lacrosse toward the end of the season. The Arizona State loss definitely saw them take a significant drop in the polls, a 12-7 loss on the road. It doesn't look as bad as it potentially was. The word was that a lot of those goals that they were kind of down a 12-3 into the last minutes and kind of got 3-4 goals in a late flurry when ASU more or less had the game won. And that really goes to show you how perception is more or less everything in regards to the drop that they took, and really how Twitter plays into this, because you're able to follow the game on Twitter faster than you were able to follow the game on mcla.us. But regardless, BYU really picking up these four wins at the right time, really easing into it from Arizona at the bottom of the poll, working their way up to Oregon, back down to Cal, who recently beat Oregon, and then Stanford, who was a top three team until the 13-7 loss. So coming away with a 5-goal loss over Stanford, really altering that perception. Coach Schneck, Coach Harris, just doing a fantastic job as well as Coach Reif, and really just getting a very strong effort this season from their player of the year candidate at long stick midi, Grayson Dahl. The kid is just an absolute monster.
Yeah. Again, you know this better than I do. I'm just trying to pick it up. But, you know, as we kind of move along, anything else you wanted to talk about on the poll, or is it time to dive into the 15 minutes of fame, which will be a little different this week, Dave?
It will be a little bit different this week. We're going to shake things up. But, yeah, my last two poll notes are just the two most significant teams that are currently falling out of the poll. On the Division I side, SUNY Buffalo, you know, the reigning two-time Pioneer League champ, that made the transition from the CCLA, going back to the CCLA, going back to their roots to get some out of conference competition off of their almost annual tour of the SCLC, losing to Michigan State 10-3, losing to Davenport 13-2. Bulls really replacing a lot on offense. Coach Crawford, also one of the best in the MCLA with his background as a high school and college player and his experience with the Buffalo program. But Buffalo falling out of the polls, and it really just has the other teams in the Pioneer League that are competing for Greenville berths, such as Boston College, Northeastern, and UConn, really licking their chops as all those teams remain ranked. And then SCAD ultimately finally falling out of the polls. Again, they have a huge win over Palm Beach Atlantic, who's currently a top 10 team, but they lost to Sam Houston State 12-5, who's also an interesting team to talk about as far as the potential at-large bid they're going for now that the Lone Star Alliance doesn't have the AQ in Division II. And then a 7-6 loss to Missouri Baptist, who the team was struggling earlier on in the season, but now rebounding to potentially take the GRLC that Washington University in St. Louis is showing some signs of weakness. But I picked my Franklin's 15 minutes of fame earlier this week. They're on InsideLacrosse.com, and I will actually reveal those on the podcast going into our interview, as there's a bit of a connection there on the Division I side. But Terry, why don't you tell the fans why it's different this week?
Well, you know, in an effort to, I guess, ratchet up my ability to speak educatedly about the MCLA, you put it on me to decide my own players of the week. And you know, I don't know if it counts as 15 minutes. It's probably like 7.5 minutes by comparison. But picked out a couple of guys that I wanted to spotlight as well. And, you know, kind of toeing in the water, as it were. So I'll lead it off with my Division I Player of the Week, and I'm going to go with a guy that has already been awarded a Franklin's 15 Minutes of Fame earlier this week. Coming into the season as a returning All-American midfielder for Florida State, Luke Donovan, you know, realized that the Seminoles haven't gotten together the season that they would have liked, and you know, after losing to SMU, you know, might have been considered maybe the low point of the season. They played 3 games in 3 days this past weekend, and Donovan came out of it with 13 points, you know, for a midfielder, you know, for a guy that puts up the type of production that he does, you know, difficult to ignore, albeit not against the best competition that they've played all season, but still 3 SCLC wins. You know, you can't underestimate the power that that has in terms of turning around a season, you know, as Florida State tries to rebound a little bit. So Luke Donovan wins over Wake Forest, NC State, Alabama, coming up with 5-3-5. Got to give it to him. And then on the D2 side, staying close to home, you know, I give Dave a lot of heat about being a homer from time to time, you know, and as I just kind of look around the ranks of D2, obviously my eye is going to be drawn to John Carroll, and, you know, the streak's got to win over Carnegie Mellon this week, and so I got to give it to my man David Brill, a sophomore attackman who came up with 4 goals and 4 assists, you know. Obviously, again, John Carroll not necessarily having the type of season that they might have hoped for in their first season in the MCLA, I believe. Maybe it's their second. But ultimately their last as they move to D3 next year and join the varsity ranks of things. But David Brill, Luke Donovan, my players of the week. How'd I do, Dave?
Pretty good, Terry. Pretty good. Really not bad. John Carroll's been in the league for a few years. This is definitely the second or third year that they've really try to be competitive. But listen, man, I'm just going to say this. You are no longer allowed to dog me about being a homer or anything like that when I make my picks, because you just chose an SCLC player yourself who's been documented on the podcast before by me. And then for Division II, you went back to your hometown roots. So I'm just going to say you did a good job. You identified some talented players, as I feel as though I always do. But in the way this dynamic works out and with the picks that you just made, I don't want any more heat, Terry. I don't want any more heat.
Well, I can't promise that, but I'll do my best.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. So for the fans that didn't see it, I posted my Franklin's 15 Minutes of Fame on InsideLacrosse.com yesterday, on Wednesday, actually, as it relates to this podcast being posted on Friday. But we'll start things off to Division II as we lead into our guest interview for the week. But our Division II coach of the week is Derek Dane from St. John's, Minnesota. Picked up three big out-of-conference wins in the CCLA last week, really taking down the big three as it applies to the Central Collegiate Lacrosse Association, picking up wins against three ranked teams in Grand Valley State, Indiana Tech, and Dayton. And then, interestingly enough, very timely, Western Oregon University in town to visit Minnesota and play the two premier programs out there, ultimately coming away with two losses against both St. Thomas and St. John's. But St. John's and Derek Dane picking up the 11-9 win over the Western Oregon Wolves last night. So a lot of credit to Derek as a Minnesota Duluth alum and MCLA Division I fan. He's currently in a position where, you know, his team is firmly locked into an at-large spot and certainly competing for an upper Midwest region title. But with the way that it relates to his alma mater on the D1 side of things, losing the automatic qualifying bid as Marquette made the transition to NCAA, he's going to hope that his former teammate and buddy Sam Littman, first-year coach at Duluth, does enough to win out and win the UMLC or UMLL title to get to Greenville, where they could shake hands and exchange a few good stories and laughs. And then our Division II player of the week, we're actually going to keep it upper Midwest region focused, a rival of St. John's University, another team that really wants to knock off the Johnnies as well as the Tommies, and earn their bid to Greenville this year at way of a conference championship. And they might do it on the back of Ben Harden, a junior goalie and first-year starter for North Dakota State. And every big win that the Bison have picked up, Terry, he's really put up had his best performances. And I think that when you evaluate a goalie at any level of lacrosse, you really, in order to be considered elite, you have to have your biggest moments in the biggest, most important games. And when you take a look at the win that North Dakota State picked up of Western Oregon coming into that region to play all three of the big teams from the upper Midwest, 16 saves on 23 shots and a 9-7 victory. Western Oregon currently ranked number 14, while North Dakota State currently sits within the top ranks as well. Terry, as a former high school goalie, I think you could speak to Ben Harden being a strong candidate for Franklin's 15 Minutes of Fame as a Division II player this week.
Well, yeah, I mean, you took so much heat early in the season for being so offensive oriented that I understand that. I think last week we had a defender and a goalie, so you know, I can't say it's about time you got around to it, but I'm glad that you got around to it again.
I appreciate it, man. I do it for you. I do it for you. And I hate to take things back to a focus that is offensive and close to home for me. And I have to say, coming off of your Franklin's 15 Minutes of Fame pick, Luke Donovan, definitely an interesting one. We'll see if him and the Noles make it to the MCLA tournament, but he's definitely an outstanding player who should get Player of the Year consideration regardless of what the Noles do as far as a team toward the end of the season. His numbers are incredible. My former roommate on the Israel national team, Jason Center, who plays defense and long stick midi for Florida State, has really said that even in his years playing competitive high school lacrosse in the Maryland, D.C. area, that Luke Donovan is the nastiest player he's ever played with or against, which speaks to a lot because we played against some pretty good players this summer and played with some pretty good players this summer as well. And as it relates to Israel's national team, happy Passover to Daniel Cohen, a senior attackman from Cal Berkeley, also putting together a lot of big games over the course of this year, really, not only recently, but he had 5 goals and a premier win for Cal over Oregon in a close loss to BYU earlier this week. He actually had 3 goals and an assist, and when you're tallying 4 points against a team that's playing as well as BYU right now and as rich an MCLA tradition is BYU. I think that it speaks to a lot. And, you know, I asked Coach Norris about this, so I could appropriately wish him a happy Passover. He definitely identifies as Jewish, and Coach Norris definitely not shy to say that he's a good candidate for the 2014 Israel World Team. And if he's able to get to Tel Aviv for tryouts this summer, I definitely support that. And then we'll go into our Division I Franklin's 15 Minutes of Fame Coach of the Week, Doug Carl from Sonoma State. This is a team, as we talked about earlier in the podcast, that is currently in a spot where, of course, they want to look out for themselves and have their own success in the WCLL and hopefully win the WCLL title against the competitive competition that they have with Cal Poly, and that of Stanford. But most recently, they've picked up a lot of good out-of-conference wins coming out of some out-of-conference losses. They had a very interesting loss and a very interesting themed rivalry game, 8-6 to Oregon, and then kind of was a little bit hungover from that loss and lost 9-7 to Oregon State, which really kind of put Oregon State on the map. But since, Sonoma State has picked up a 9-8 win over a ranked Texas team, an 11-6 win over a New Hampshire team in the Pioneer League that competes well. Richmond, an 11-8 win over them. Richmond is currently the most dangerous unranked team, maybe besides Northeastern in the MCLA. A 5-2 win over Virginia Tech, who up until recently was first in class or first in show as far as the SCLC was concerned. And then a 7-5 win over Pittsburgh, a team that made their way to the MCLA tournament for the first time last year via a CCLA at-large bid that Michigan essentially left over for them. So a string of 5 out-of-conference wins in a row that has Sonoma in a position not only to really just kind of, I wouldn't say has a solidified at-large bid, but definitely helps their chances. If one or more of these teams is able to win their respective conference championship, it's definitely going to help their postseason if they should not win the WCLL title. And when we take things back to their 8-6 loss to Oregon, a nice little transition here as we welcome in our podcast guest this week, a 2010 graduate of Sonoma State, one of the youngest coaches among the best MCLA teams in the game right now, Phil Keebler from the University of Oregon.
And the Inside Lacrosse MCLA podcast continues with Oregon head coach Phil Keebler, whose Ducks are 7-4 and coming off of a pair of high-profile but disappointing setbacks is probably a good way to do it and say it. And coach, you know, obviously that you guys got off to a great start this season. You know, coming off of losses against California and BYU, how would you characterize the state of your team as you guys look to finish up this stretch in April?
I think the team morale is pretty good right now. You know, obviously there's a healthy dose of pain and embarrassment coming from the weekend, but you know, at the same time, we have nobody to blame but ourselves. So everyone's looking in the mirror and just kind of ask themselves what they can do to be better. And everyone's pretty motivated going forward. I mean, we have our next three opponents, our PNCLL opponents, and you know, we're just motivated to be a better team, and we understand that our most important games are yet to be played. You know, we're not really that concerned with the drop in the polls. We care where we're ranked in the final poll, but up until then, you know, we just want to get better every week and put ourselves in the best position to, you know, to be a great team at the end of the season.
Coach Keebler, before we jump into the conference play and the pivotal games that lie ahead, let's just take a little bit of a backtrack into this season's past. On March 9th, you got a nice 8-6 win over your own alma mater, Sonoma State, when you welcomed the Sea Wolves up there to Eugene. Coach Carl actually earning Franklin's 15 minutes of fame this week, coming off of the losses to you guys in Oregon State, putting together a nice string of out-of-conference wins. When we spoke before this game, you essentially recognized your alma mater as an opponent who is standing in the way of you and your team and your team's goals. But a few weeks removed from the game, just take a second to tell us, you know, what Sonoma State means to you, what Coach Carl means to your lacrosse career, and what it means to get a win over your alma mater as a first-year MCLA head coach.
Yeah, well, you know, Coach Carl's resume speaks for itself. I mean, there's not very many coaches who've guided their teams to multiple conference titles and a national title. And he deserves a lot of credit for that. You know, he's a no BS guy, which everyone that comes into the program, I think, really respects. He really preaches you to be a blue collar guy, just working hard and, you know, understanding that you're going to have to earn everything that you get. And, you know, teams have had success in the past at Sonoma, but, you know, coming in, you know, you don't rest on those laurels and you don't expect things just to happen because you are that team and that program. You know, you really got to earn it. So that's something that you definitely respect and something that you definitely buy into. You know, I'm a proud alum of Sonoma. I think that, you know, I'm glad that they're back, you know, and obviously Coach Carl deserves a lot of credit for that. They've had kind of a rough go the past couple of years, but, you know, they're back playing again at a very high level. But, you know, to be honest, the game still, I mean, what I took from that game was that it was a good win over a good team. You know, who was in the coach's box, who, you know, what name was on the jersey, that never really factored into anything. It's just, you know, it was a good win over a good team. But, you know, it's not really my job to, you know, to get into all that stuff, you know, the week leading up to it or during the game. So, you know, like I said, a good win over a good team, but, you know, it was, you know, to be honest, it was just another game. You know, I wish I had some, you know, nice little story, sentimental story for you, but, you know, it was just a good win over a good team.
The lone other team to beat Sonoma this year so far is your cross-state rival, Oregon State, now 8-2 after losing their first two games of the season on quite a hot streak, and it's shaping up to make the Civil War between the two programs, you know, one of the best in recent memory as the Beavers are making some pretty quick strides in the conference. How do you characterize what the ascendance of the other Marquee State School in Oregon means to your program and kind of the state of club lacrosse in Oregon?
Yeah, no, it's great for the state. It's great for the state of Oregon to have two teams ranked in the top 25 and both playing at a very high level. You know, regardless of the records or where teams are in the standings, the Civil War is always a huge game, Oregon versus Oregon State. There's always a lot on the line as far as bragging rights. You know, a lot of our players and their players come from the same high schools or come from rival high schools. So they've been competing against each other for a long time now. So, you know, there's always that and it's always big. You know, this year, probably a little bit bigger just because that, this is the first time in a while that both teams have both been playing at a high level and been playing at a very similar level. So I think it's going to make for a good one on April 20th.
Coach Keebler, in addition to the Oregon State Beavers, your primary conference rival is the team from north of the border, the Simon Fraser Clan. You played them in the second game of the season, picking up a pretty close 9-8 win, really keeping the shave close in that one. What is your anticipation in regards to meeting them in your conference postseason, and how do you sum up their style of play and how it compares to yours and the other top teams in the MCLA?
Yeah, you know, Simon Fraser is a great program. You know, Brent does a great job with those guys, and they're really competitive year in and year out. So Oregon and Simon Fraser have met in the conference finals in each of the past six seasons. So until somebody else really steps up and claims one of those top two spots, you know, I fully expect to see them there again in the postseason, and deservedly so on both of our parts. But you know, they have an interesting style. You know, they play fast. They, you know, they like to push the ball and, they have the athletes to do it. So, they're a tough matchup for anyone. And, you know, we played them early in the year and we were able to squeeze out a close one. But we understand that, you know, if and when we see them again, they're going to be a much different team, a much better team. And, you know, not only with a lot more on the line being at the postseason, but just, you know, having progressed throughout their year with the top schedule that they play. So, but on the same, you know, on the same side, we're going to be a different team too than we were on February 13th. But, you know, I expect the battle. I expect another close game. And, you know, it's just kind of the way it goes up here in the PNCLL. It's, seems to come down to us or them. So we love it that way, being a rival and,
we spent a lot of time talking about some of your opponents, but can you tell us, you know, fans a little bit more about your team and who are some of the guys that you're going to rely on if you do, you know, make it to the MCLA tournament, that sort of thing?
Yeah, well, I think I think there's a lot of guys that, you know, that probably stand out to people. But, you know, if you watch our team, there's definitely probably a couple guys that stand out above the rest. First guy would be Matt Johnson. He's a senior attackman, local guy from right here in Eugene out of Sheldon High School. He's a senior, been our most consistent point producer, just an overall good player. And then, you know, goalie, Steven Oppenheimer, he's a junior. His first year as a starter, and he's played fantastic. He's definitely been the MVP of our defense, if not the MVP of our team. And then a couple other guys, you know, Benson Sowers at attack. He's a junior at a Lake Ridge High School in Lake Oswego. Then you got, you know, we're looking to get back this guy. He's been out for a couple games, but he's our long stick middie. His name's Mark Seaton. He's also a Portland guy at a Jesuit, freshman, just solid athlete, solid player. Definitely been missing him. You know, we have a lot of guys, you know, middies, Evan Merritt, Taylor White, Trey Norris. And then, you know, on the defensive side, I'd look for Ben Smoot and Shane O'Rourke.
Coach Kubler, I actually had an opportunity to talk to Matt Johnson at last year's MCLA tournament. We actually had an interesting conversation about your team's gear. It was so interesting to see an Oregon lacrosse team not wearing Nike uniforms in the height of the rise of the Nike lacrosse brand. You and I actually spoke about this a little bit earlier on in the season. You installed some really cool changes to the gear. Tell us a little bit about why Oregon is still the best dressed team in the MCLA.
Well, I think you guys and everyone else would be the better judge of that. Not willing to say that, although I do think we look pretty sharp this year, thanks to some of the designs that our players have been coming up with. But yeah, we went back to Nike for uniforms and apparel, which, you know, as you preface the question, it's just seems right as the University of Oregon to be in Nike. And, you know, they do a good job with us in helping us out. So it's just good to be back in that stuff. And, we got a good set of uniforms this year. We're still in Warrior helmets and Warrior gloves. But, you know, everything else is Nike, and we're happy about it.
Coach Kubler, just kind of staying on that varsity track, so to speak, at least, you know, as it relates to, you know, how Nike is so entrenched in the University of Oregon. I think that, you know, one of the other elements that's unique about your program, particularly in that part of the country, is the fact that, you know, Oregon's women's lacrosse team continues to improve and continues to kind of reap the benefits of being a part of a very high profile athletic department. How would you characterize, you know, the club's relationship with the athletic department and the women's lacrosse team in particular?
Well, there really isn't a whole lot of relationship between ourselves and the athletic department. We're a club sport, obviously, governed by the club sports office, and you know, I mean, that's basically all there is to it. We don't have access to the women's facility. That's just something that, you know, it would be nice, no doubt about it. You know, it's a great venue. I've gotten the opportunity to walk through it and tour the locker rooms and the film room and step on the field. And it's a fantastic facility. And we'd love to play there, but at the same time, it's, you know, that's kind of being put on the back burner as there's just so many other things to focus on right now in season, and then even when we're not in season. So yeah, there's really nothing going on there.
Really interesting to evaluate that in regards to how athletic departments will treat their MCLA lacrosse programs and how it relates to if they have a varsity women's lacrosse program or not. I know that Florida doesn't get to use their women's facility. Boston College, on the other hand, the men's team actually gets to use the varsity football alumni stadium. So it's always interesting to take a look at that. And really staying on this varsity athletic or athletic department in a track, if you will, to wrap up the interview here, Phil. Oregon basketball having really unprecedented success this season. We've evaluated this a lot in the lacrosse world, from myself to Terry, even to Quinn Kesnick. Duke won a lacrosse national championship after the basketball team cut down the nets in 2010. Terry's alma mater, Loyola, won the national championship in Division I lacrosse last year after the basketball team got back to the tournament in almost 20 years. Florida Gulf Coast, a team at the Division II level of the MCLA, I think is pretty dangerous. Has the basketball team's success and their entrance into the Sweet 16 against Louisville raised athletic morale to the extent that it's touched your players and getting them pumped up for their own postseason, Coach Kubler?
Well, Oregon men's basketball won two games in the tournament last week and on the same weekend that we lost to. So not sure that that's the best thing for us. No, I'm just kidding. But no, it's great. It's great to have another sport, another big sport like basketball, doing really well at Oregon. Matthew Knight Arena is a great place. It's one of the best, if not the best venue in college basketball. You know, obviously I'm a little biased, but if you've been there, you know. And, you know, Coach Altman's doing a great job. We have a good coach. We have a good facility. Obviously, Oregon Athletics is, was pretty reputable. So I think it only helps. It only helps everybody. You know, it's obviously good for the school at large, but it's good for our program and attracting a lot of those guys who want to come to a school where you can get that big time athletic environment. You know, you obviously have the football team, and then, you know, with the recent basketball success, I think it's definitely just something that raises the morale, like you said, on campus with the current students and is attractive to potential students.
Well, Coach Kubler, we want to thank you so much for your time, getting up early out there on the West Coast and recording this podcast with us. Good luck going forward. Obviously, like we mentioned at the top, coming off of a week in which you guys are certainly looking to improve on, and you know, as you go into the final stretch of the season, we wish you all the best.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate you guys for having me on, and have a nice day. Thank you.
We want to thank Phil Kubler again for joining us on the podcast as the Oregon Ducks ready themselves for an April stretch run. And Dave, that leads us to the picks for the weekend. We get started here with a couple of Thursday games. Most of you are probably listening to this on Friday morning or at some point over the weekend. So we'll start the folks out with a couple games that they'll be able to know whether or not you got right or wrong.
Absolutely. Just quickly previewing that maybe in the future we'll have some celebrity guests come in and do the pick segment with us and pick against me. I haven't really picked games black or white so far this season as much as previewed them, but I picked some good Division I games that I'll take down the line right now, starting with the Thursday matchups. Santa Barbara travels to Arizona State, a nice Southwestern Lacrosse Conference rivalry. That is a rematch of an SLC playoff game from last year that Arizona State won. And I think that Arizona State will win this year again. Arizona State comes into this game ranked number 4, UCSB ranked number 7. I think that ASU is still riding pretty high from their win off of BYU, while UCSB has, certainly been contending well, but just a bit of a rough go of it as of late with the 6-4 loss to Colorado. A nice rebound win over Grand Canyon, but I think that ASU has the edge in this one. Colorado against Utah. Colorado ranked number 2nd, and of course kind of has to do a good job to focus in on this game and not look forward to a more pivotal matchup with BYU. But the coaching staff at Colorado is always very diligent to point out that outside of Colorado State and BYU, Utah is a strong competitor in the RMLC as well. But I see the Buffaloes taking that game pretty easily. And as we move into Friday, Texas State at Texas. We talked with Andy Garrigan on an earlier edition of the podcast and touched on this game specifically. This will, without question, be a rematch of the LSA championship game, in my opinion. Texas State coming into this unranked, being kind of on the fringe of the 24-25 spot in the Nike Inside Lacrosse poll. Texas currently at the 13 spot. I think that Andy Garrigan will be prepared as the home team in this one and take that game against the Bobcats. Northeastern versus Pitt. Northeastern, as I mentioned before, perhaps the most dangerous unranked team in the MCLA, along with that of Richmond. Northeastern receiving 59 votes, just edging them out of the poll this week against the Pitt team that's ranked number 22. I don't think that Pitt wants to lose this game. They want to remain ranked. They want to remain in contention for an at-large bid. Northeastern, on the flip side, wants to break back into the poll and really show that they're an elite MCLA team, not only in their conference but nationally. And for that reason, I think that James Morin and the Huskies pick up the win over Sean Buzzard's squad on the road in Pittsburgh. Then we have that very pivotal Colorado-BYU game. BYU playing their best lacrosse of the season right now, coming off the win against number 3 Stanford. And BYU is the home team in Provo. Marty Taffet made a joke to me that he'll be celebrating his Passover in Provo. And unfortunately, I don't see Marty having a very good Passover. I think that BYU is going to win that game and ultimately propel back into the top 3 and maybe perhaps not the Buffaloes down to a 5 spot. And then to wrap things up, we'll talk about the team from up north in Canada. Simon Fraser, 2 big games against CCLA opponents, 9th ranked Michigan State, 24th ranked Davenport, when you take into consideration that the Clan is ranked number 25 at the moment. Really interesting to take a look at the Davenport game. And I see the CCLA really getting the better of the Canadian Clan in both of these games. Brandon Schwind, another guest on the podcast this year, got a late start to his season, but really has his team clicking now, especially on the offensive side. He really gave a lot of props to Tyler Ryan, a big transition middy who's really coming to his own as an offensive threat. Had a little bit of trouble hitting the cage earlier this season, getting a lot of pipe off of set plays, but had 2 goals in State's last game. And I see him having a big game against Simon Fraser. And Davenport, actually coming off of a 12-9 win over their crosstown and former Division II rival in Grand Valley. I see them picking up a huge premier win over Simon Fraser, a former Final Four team in the MCLA tournament. Davenport continuing to try to pick up premier wins over well-established MCLA teams to show just how well they belong in MCLA Division I. I think Coach Gervat is doing an unbelievable job with that team in transition, really breaking the mold from what we've seen as teams have transitioned in the past from MCLA Division II, Division I. And that's all I got, Terry.
All right, Dave. Well, then that'll do it for this edition of the Inside Lacrosse MCLA podcast. I want to thank you, as always, for your time, effort, and expertise. And we will join you again next week as we bring fans what would hopefully be a little bit more of a calm. Nah, that doesn't make sense. We're just going to bring you another MCLA podcast, and hopefully you'll enjoy it.
That's what we're hoping for. That's what we try to achieve each week. Thank you for tuning in, folks. Thank you to Phil Keebler for joining us this week. And we'll catch you this week, same time, same channel.
Inside Lacrosse Podcast.